I'm going to invite Richard Wynne and Donald McEnany to speak to you about an evaluation of 15 projects that we were involved in supporting that was looking at a different way of supporting young people with disabilities when they leave school. So I'll hand you over to Richard. Thank you.
Morning all. I'm not used to speaking to people at this hour of the morning. And my colleague, Donald McEnany, is in the front row here, gracefully sitting out this particular presentation, but he will answer plenty of questions if needs be. I want to tell you a little bit about a project which we recently completed for Genio, which is evaluating 15 projects which were more or less all aimed at supporting school leavers in the transition from school to some kind of after-school arrangement, be that employment, training, education, or other kinds of activities. I want to begin by showing you a few slides about what we actually did in the study, because it will, I think, help hopefully head off some of the questions you might have about the details of what we did. But I want to spend most of the time talking a little bit about findings and also about the implications of these findings, because I think even though many of the projects that we are talking about have not yet completed their work, I think there are still some very valuable insights to be gained. And it raises some very important questions in relation to some of the issues which you've already raised here this morning. Just to tell you very briefly, and I'm sure you all know this, that there is a policy imperative in operation here, and it's coming from the fact that the New Directions report has said that there is a context for day care services for people with disabilities moving from centre-based provision to a more community and employment-focused approach. As there is a move towards individualised planning and delivery of services, and I would emphasise both of these elements, both planning and delivery, because not necessarily all of these are all projects that do both to the same extent. And there's an issue about a need to assess the costs of new approaches to these service provision. All 15 projects, to a greater or lesser extent, that we looked at, were influenced by this policy context. The 15 projects concerned were funded by Genio in 2012, and they all, in order to qualify for funding, had to explore alternative ways of meeting work, education, training and recreation needs through mainstream services in real community settings. They aimed to provide innovative responses to delivering individualised support to prepare school leavers for independent lives. They aimed to provide work-focused support, job-focused training and further education, and they aimed to create opportunities to socialise and engage in desired recreational activities in the community. I should say that not all projects did all three things, but they were all influenced in that direction to a greater or lesser extent. As I said before, 15 projects were funded, 14 provided information to us as part of the process or of the evaluation process. They varied quite widely. So, for example, they had between 1 and 62 service users taking part in the projects, so they're quite different. Some were relatively close to labour market, others were quite far away from labour market. Mostly service users had learning disabilities or were somewhere on the autism spectrum. A minority had a physical disability. And during the course of the evaluation, we interviewed 58 service users, 39 from 14 projects that we've mentioned, and another 19 from comparison services and projects that we could access. I just want to emphasise that the comparison group was not a control group in terms of scientific design. It had many; they shared many features, but it did not have all of the features of a full control group. I'd like to emphasise also, and this is important, I think, that not all participants were school leavers. They were young, but some were, might have been 22, 23, 24 years of age. We basically looked at four different areas in trying to undertake this evaluation. And I should emphasise, actually, that not all of the projects are finished their work at this point, so it's really a snapshot rather than an endpoint evaluation we're talking about here. We looked at the individual's attitudes and satisfaction with various aspects of quality of life, in particular how services that they received impacted on these aspects of quality of life. We looked at the processes and activities that projects got involved with using program logic models. We looked at the costs, the direct costs of providing these services with a measure of these direct costs, and used these costs to compare it to some of the data that was available from the Value for Money study. And we also looked at a personal needs profile, in other words, to try to get some idea of the range and the depth and the type of needs that people might have. We had, broadly speaking, seven research questions. Firstly, we wanted to document what project activities actually took place, because it wasn't always clear what these might be. We wanted to find out what were participants in these projects most satisfied with. We wanted to see and answer the question, were the costs of these projects higher or lower in comparison to traditional provision of services? Was spending associated with better results? What level of disability was level of disability related to better results? And what activities were most associated with better results? And it was on this latter question I think some of the most interesting findings came about. Just to say that I think the findings that we've got are not definitive, but they are more than suggestive, is probably the best way to put it. Now, you won't be able to read all of this, and I'm not expecting that you should. There is a report available, it's on the website of Genio, and which you can look at these models to your heart's content. But just to tell you that there are a few things here which I think are important about the kinds of activities which projects undertook to a greater or lesser extent. If you look at the left-hand column here, it says activities. And broadly speaking, projects undertook four kinds of activities which were related to the idea of personalized programming. So they undertook activities in relation to building the personal capacity of individuals, of enhancing work, learning skills, and employability, providing formal supports, and of engaging with the community. In addition, projects may undertake or undertook to a greater or lesser extent what you might regard as organizational hygiene activities, and in light of some of the previous questions, I think these might be important. Firstly, some projects undertook their own research and evaluation of what they were doing, mainly as an exercise in trying to promote organizational learning and organizational change. Related to this was the idea that this project that they were undertaking would be used to help change the whole organizational context. One organization in particular saw this as a means of field trialing a major change in their entire service provision models. And lastly, some others talked about project management and having appropriate and detailed project management activities in place. I should add that just because not all projects, I think all projects did some element of these things, but not necessarily did they define that these were important elements of what they did. What we were looking for was to see whether these activities ultimately would have some kind of outcomes, be they immediate or longer term. The idea was that ultimately these activities would lead to improved choice and control for service users, that would lead to improved quality of life, and that it would support the transition from school to after-school activities of some sort. These were the service users' perceptions in terms of the impact of the services they're receiving on various aspects of quality of life. As you can see, we had two groups, as I mentioned. In blue, we had the Genio projects, and in orange, we had the comparison group. And it was interesting that in four, or certainly three of the different dimensions of quality of life and the impact of services on them, the Genio projects service users did much better than the comparison group. This was in relation to knowledge of their own rights, in relation to citizenship, engaging in citizenship activities, having a perception of improved employability, and feeling more socially included. These, I think, are key findings. The question is, why were these findings in place? And we did some analyses which have begun to show why these ratings were so positive. Just on costs, we found that, again, in relation to the Genio projects and comparisons with traditional services, that about three quarters of them had lower costs than traditional services, whereas about a quarter had more or less equal or higher costs than traditional services. We asked the question, why were project ratings higher? Were there higher ratings due to differences in the level of support needs of the individuals? The basic answer was no, there was no consistent relationship. So in other words, people with higher levels of disability did not necessarily report higher or lower satisfaction in terms of the impact of services. Equally, we looked at spending. It might well be the case, or you might imagine, that projects which spent more might achieve higher ratings and satisfaction. And again, this wasn't the case. There was no consistent relationship between spending and the perceptions of the individuals. We then looked at what project activities were rated most highly in relation to the quality of life dimensions that we were talking about. And there were three kinds of processes or activities which projects might have undertaken. And I'm going to show you the ones that were associated with these higher ratings of satisfaction or quality of life. Firstly, there were person-facing processes. In other words, our activities were specifically directed at the individual service user. And some of the key activities here included, for example, capacity building, teaching people about rights and self-advocacy, teaching people how to learn, mentoring, stress management. These were all associated with high levels of quality of life impact. Equally, the individualization of support and interventions was very important. Further education and training was very important. And there's a long list of them here, which you can see, which appear to be associated with better quality of life impacts. There are also environment-facing processes. I think some of the most interesting findings came about from this here. So, for example, projects which provided active support to families and volunteers tended to be rated more highly by the service users. And where staff training was provided to enable them to implement the new models, it tended to get higher ratings as well. Equally, many projects talked about identifying community-based resources, groups, and volunteers. I think just about all projects talked about doing this, but where there was a very active program of going out and preparing and engaging with these various community resources, the ratings tended to be somewhat higher. Lastly, we talked about system-facing processes and activities. And here, where project management was strong and overt, where there was research, data collection, and evaluation going on, and where there was an overt organizational change program, these tended to achieve higher ratings in the eyes of the service users as well. We were asked in part of the project and in our conclusions to come up with some ideas in relation to the forces which will affect the upscaling of some of these findings. I think one of the most positive things which is out there at the moment is in the policy background, and this is the new directions report and the implementation plan that is associated with it. I won't go through all of these elements here, but suffice to say that there are various good aspects of policy and planning which are in place and which should facilitate change in the longer term. On the other hand, there are constraining factors as well. There are constraints within the New Directions Implementation Plan which need to be faced up to. These include, for example, the capacity to implement the new Directions Plan on the behalf of the HSE. It's as much a question of resources, it's a question of people, it's a question of training, and it's a question of organisational change. There's an issue regarding the flexibility of the use of HSE funds to purchase mainstream services. This doesn't seem to be easily done under the current systems. There doesn't appear to be a strong interdepartmental action on the integrated policy that is needed. And the culture and ethos within some of the new departments that would be involved, that is jobs, enterprise, innovation, and social protection, may not be as supportive or as open to change as the new directions policy would hope. There are other facilitating forces out there which we've learned from the projects. The best projects that we looked at, for example, had good staff training programs, they had leadership commitment, as Fiona outlined earlier on, that they'd got strong partnerships and collaborations with community organizations, that they had a systematic approach to recruiting and training volunteers, and that they got support from families and significant others. These are all amongst the positive factors that will facilitate change in the longer term. But there are also some constraining factors which emerge from our looking at the projects as well. One problem is the continuing use of the medical model. Others include, for example, the idea of volunteer fatigue. One of the things we were struck by was that not all projects are situated within large centres of population by any means. And very often there's a limited supply of volunteers within the community, and it would be quite easy to imagine that volunteer fatigue would set in the longer term. It's something which needs to be addressed. Another issue is the availability of employment options. In the current economy, these are not widespread, as we know, and it's something which will need to be addressed in the longer term, that there'll be some kind of transitional work options, perhaps. Lastly, I think there's the issue of legacy services and legacy service users. In other words, people who have become so used to the old systems that it's very difficult to move on from there to where we might want to go in the future. In conclusion, we believe that the new project showed considerable promise in terms of increased user satisfaction, lower or equivalent costs that could be achieved, and that this could be achieved in relation to service users at a range of different needs. The key issue is individualization of services, not just of planning. Most projects, and even many traditional projects and services, would claim to plan individually, but not necessarily deliver activities in an individualized basis. And lastly, scaling up involves significant implementation challenges, but will take place within a relatively positive policy context. Thank you for your attention.